You're listening to Sportsnet Today on the official home of your Calgary Flames. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Oh, yeah. Where else would you rather be on a Friday than hanging out with Peter Klein and GVP?
Yeah, you heard it. GVP's on the afternoons right now, out of nowhere.
The hardest working man in the building, GVP.
I don't know about that, but I'll take it. I'll take the credit.
Look, you're just working hard to not fall asleep right now.
Yeah, you don't see what I do here in the morning. Maybe I'm a slacker. I'm not going to say that I am, but you don't know that. Exactly.
Can't even say his full name. We have to abbreviate it all the time.
I know, it's a mouthful. George has called me Garrett maybe once ever, and it scared me when he did.
See, I didn't even know that was your name. I kind of just thought it was G-E-E-V-E-E-P-E.
Yes, yeah.
Either way, we're hanging out in the DL Basin Systems downtown studio. Cam's in there doing whatever the hell it is he does. On a totally not thrown together program for you guys today. We all knew coming in that the guy who hosts a podcast, Couch Potato Diary Daily, wherever you get your podcast, the morning show producer and Cam would all be hanging out together in the afternoon. We knew that was coming on your Friday.
Look at us.
Totally normal day.
It's going to be awesome, though.
Oh, it
should
be
a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk some Flames against the Ducks coming up tonight. Going to talk about whatever the hell that was last night as the Flames took on the LA Kings. We have Emerson Needham coming up at 1:30, the radio caller analyst for the Anaheim Ducks. He of the extraordinary 60-goal season with the Medicine Hat Tigers once. We'll get into some stuff with him. Going to talk some good old face-punching at 2 o'clock as UFC 300 is just around the corner.
Maybe the biggest card of all time.
Maybe.
We'll get into that later, yes. But listen, top to bottom, UFC 300 should be an awesome event this Saturday.
Stacked is how they would call it. And then we got your DMs coming up at 2:30. So it's going to be a fun one. Don't just save the text for 2:30. We want to hear from you all day over on the Fan Feedback Line, 960-960, as we hang out in the DL Basement Systems downtown studios for Doug Lacey's Basement Systems. We are your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. We are all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. Before we get into Flames Ducks tonight, GVP,
yes.
I do think we should touch on the hockey game that we saw last night as the Flames took on the Kings of Los Angeles. And I have felt, while the Flames have kind of permanently gone the retool route now,
yep.
Like there isn't the will they, won't they, who knows, we know. And now it is now down the path of retooling. That for a lot of the games, there's at least been you know what? They battled. They tried. They were close against Edmonton and, it doesn't go their way. They were close against this team, then a couple goals in the third period, and, they lost this game. And last night was a nice reminder that, this is happening for a reason. Last night was a bit of a, that this is a retool. It's probably not all going to be fixed in a year, and there is still
R word at you and might even say this is a rebuild.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's all semantics at the end of the day.
Right.
This team is going in a different direction. An era, is changing here in Calgary. The management feels like they want to finally turn the page on, a decade of Flames hockey where they're just fine with being eight, fine with being nine, convincing themselves that they were in a playoff race. Even just a couple weeks ago, I can attest to this, that we were talking about the Flames are we thinking about the playoffs? The race out west, it's basically officially closed right now with the Blues and the Vegas Golden Knights really trying to wrap up that final wild card spot. But when it comes to the Flames, we were trying to convince ourselves that they were still in it and in it and in it until really it wasn't. All of a sudden, they're double digit points out of this thing right now. So it's like you said, it is a rebuild, maybe even a retool. It is semantics, but last night was a clear reminder that, Flames fans might have to gear up for the long haul in this one.
Yeah. I think it should be a rebuild personally. I am team rebuild for sure. But I do understand the mindset of this particular franchise and understand that that is not necessarily a word that they appreciate throwing around all that often. So I kind of assume they're going to try to go the retool way. But either way you look at it, last night was a reminder that whatever we think this is, that's what it is. Because while the shots were 29-23, 4-1 because of an empty netter, almost feels like it did the Flames some favors. Like, I don't think that game was particularly close last night. I thought the Kings, while not the most exciting brand of hockey, of the two teams, they were clearly first last night. And it was just a reminder of how much work there still is to do, obviously, with this Flames group going forward. But it was just, I thought it was a real good example of one team that is going to be firmly in a playoff spot in this division, and one team that, with a couple of bounces, could finish with a top five pick.
Yeah, and we'll even get into the Kings a little bit more down the line in this segment. And you kind of talked about that maybe they play a bit of a boring style of hockey. I didn't really, the Kings didn't impress me a whole bunch in that game. It might have been even like a look pass game for them as they are looking towards the playoffs. I know that last night actually clinched them a playoff spot, but you brought up the shot total there. And yeah, it was close for the Flames, but again, it was like it was like quality. I mean, quantity over quality. Like I can only really think of a handful of chances in which the Flames had a real chance of making an effort in that game. And the second period comes to mind. It felt like they just got straight up beat in that period.
Yeah,
came out with not a lot of life in that one. Got into some penalty trouble in that one as well. Kind of killing the rhythm within that game, even though it was already a bit of a sloppy and chippy game that is. So any rhythm that they had in that game, it already got killed, and that's really what put them behind the eight ball last night.
Yeah, and it kind of reminded me a bit of last year, where, yeah, they're getting shots, but it's all from the outside, and none of it feels like it's overly dangerous. And any real good scoring chance they're getting, they have to work their ass off to get one. And that just, it felt like that to me last night. And I kind of look at the Kings' effort last night as a team that kind of understood who they are playing, and also a team that, like, they still have a bit to play for last night. Like, right, if they lose that game, they're only 1 point up on Vegas for a top three spot in the Pacific. Now, I don't know what is better, finishing third and potentially playing the Oilers,
who's had their number
right
over the last 2 years in a row, right?
Like, yeah, that's probably not a road they want to go down. But then, even if you do dip into a wild card spot, Edmonton's only 4 points back of Vancouver for that top spot in the Pacific, so it might be Edmonton anyway. So I don't know if there is a whole lot of, quite frankly, give a damn from this team about whether they get in as the three seed or a wild card team. But we all know they're a playoff team, so I don't know how much we can take from their effort last night. But I do think from a Flame standpoint that this is all about figuring out, like, helping the kids develop and figuring out where everyone is at.
Yeah.
And I thought last night was a bit of an example of, this is a team that, as boring as this can be at times, plays a grinding style that helps you in the playoffs. And there is no part of that game that felt playoff type game last night, but that's a playoff type of a team that they're going to have to play up against. And so I think from a learning standpoint, the Flames got a whole lot of learning in by getting kind of their butts kicked by LA.
Yeah, exactly. It's really just going to be baby steps. I'm not really sure how much of this learning you're going to be able to transfer into next season down the stretch here in the last four games. And it's not like they're playing totally elite talent for the rest of the games out here. You know, they got the Ducks, the Coyotes, and the Sharks to end the season as well. So, you know, three out of the four games is, you know, you're playing against some basement dwellers here, right? You know what I mean? So I kind of brought it up earlier today when I was on the air at 9 o'clock, and, you know, we talked about it a little bit just off the top here. It's like, well, at least I had this. And I bring up the term effort, and I know that's something that fans might get sick of hearing, but it's kind of important, not only for those younger players who still have something to prove, because jobs are on the line next season, and it's those younger players that are expected to move into those spots. But as a veteran, you're going to have to be a leader for these younger guys. You're going to have to set an example, and that starts with the effort that you bring. And really, in that middle frame, for the entire 20 minutes there, it felt like a team that just didn't have any life.
Yeah. Yeah, and another part of it is, like, that effort is, like, very important, and it also has to be for 60 minutes, right? Like, it's got to play a full 60 minutes is a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason, because you have to, especially against good teams. And they didn't last night. And that middle 20, they kind of got their brains beat in. And you look at Money Puck with the expected goal percentage. We were looking at it, Cam and I, today. I showed you. It's basically the top half of it is all the Kings, and then the bottom half of it is basically all the Flames. There's obviously some exceptions there, but it was a pretty complete, sound and thorough ass kicking by the LA Kings last night. But there was a couple of Flames that kind of stood out positively to me. And one of them was Miramanov. Obviously,
was it the long snap?
It was. Yes. Yeah. He.
That was the star. That was the star highlight for you.
Yeah. Yeah. He's obviously the Philadelphia Eagles looking for a center. With Jason Kelce out, so maybe he has a second career.
I need to change his diet to fill that spot.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
We need to bulk that one up a little bit. But yeah, he needs to start looking a bit more like me than a professional athlete. But I have liked what I have seen from him in the brief viewings that we have had so far. And we kind of talked about it in here before the show started.
Yeah.
Going into next season and already looking ahead to training camp, obviously a lot can change between now and then. But with this team, I think there are going to be a ton of defensemen who are going to be battling for, let's say, three spots for next year. Shillington doesn't have a contract, but I would hope he comes back.
I would agree. Yeah.
And then Uyghur and Anderson aren't going anywhere. And so after those guys, it's kind of this big log jam. And I do kind of feel like Miramanov is separating himself a little bit from that group right now.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. Like he's a guy who's getting power play time
right
now, whereas some of these other guys are not. And he's probably got the best shot on that blue line right now, if you're talking about that right now. And he had a decent game. I know people want to clown him for the long snap thing yesterday, but when I look at Miramanov and when he is paired with Uyghur, I know that pairing specifically can be kind of playing some fast and loose hockey defensively.
Yeah.
I know that Uyghur, as good of a season that he's having offensively, there's still some signs of some pretty poor turnovers within the defensive zone, but you know, it's not the end of the world when you're talking about this Flames team as a whole here. So I look at Miramanov, I see a lot of raw talent. I see a lot of things that are pretty green, and I'm hoping that some of those glaring holes, the more reps and the more opportunity he gets, kind of work himself out. It might be a stretch to say that, and just kind of he almost feels like Kuzmenko in a way, that he's just a guy that you got to let run and kind of learn and like not be a guy that's so structured all the time, if that makes sense.
No, for sure. Yeah. And that's going to be an interesting part here for Coach Huska going forward, who, by the way, I feel like he's done a pretty good job with this group this year when you see how many young players have kind of really stood out. But I think you're right with that. One thing that's, I think, a question going into next year, and I understand the logic now of splitting up Uyghur and Anderson so that you have like a couple defensive pairings with all due respect to them, but like top end NHL defensemen, but they haven't really figured it out with their partners yet.
Yeah.
And so they've kind of, they've tried to spread it out and have three solid defensive pairings, and they kind of have none right now. And I almost look at next year as a time to maybe put those two guys back together, because I don't think they've been, either of them have been nearly as effective without each other, right?
Yeah, and even for the goals next season, they're going to be completely different to what they were for the Flames squad this season. The Flames somewhat felt obligated to run it back and try to see what they had with this core, right? Because there were so many question marks last season about what could Jacob Markstrom do? Could he bounce back? Could Jonathan Huberdeau be an 80-point guy? That has gone south. Nazem Kadri is having a bounce-back season, but there are signs of just him not being that same type of player last season. So
And how much of it was Daryl?
Yeah. Right?
Like how much of it was that the coach kind of seemed miserable, and how much of it was just maybe this team is cooked. So you totally understand running it back.
Yeah. So like down the stretch here, they're trying to make three even pairings here while they're trying to stay within that Fugazi playoff race here. So what, looking at next season, it feels like the Flames are going to go into a phase in which they're not trying to lose games. I never want to say anyone's trying to lose games, but it's going to be a season where there's going to be more losses in that column than there are going to be wins. So just having that one solid pairing that can log a lot of minutes and take up a lot of time and at least provide a little bit of consistency is something I see as a positive, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. And like this conversation, I think, is entirely different if Poirier wasn't hurt all season long, because he's still, I think, trying to get back up to game speed a little bit. And it feels like if he doesn't get hurt in the way that he gets hurt coming into the year, then I feel like we're probably talking about him on the NHL roster by now and almost as a lock to make the team next year. But it feels like that's kind of almost been set back like a full year. Like, I wonder if we're talking about him on the team this time next year instead of at the start of training camp next season. Unless he has a blowaway training camp, then he probably makes it.
Yeah, I mean, anything can happen, right? But, I mean, there's just so many question marks when it comes to really who's fighting for jobs next season. Like,
yeah,
like even if you're looking at what's on the roster right now, like no one had Martin Pospisil as a guy who was going to, like no one had that on their bingo card. And he's a guy that's stepped into a role and has kind of ran with it. And it was his job to lose, and credit to him. He's done everything in his power to remain an NHLer for this entire season. So you never really know what's going to happen come training camp, right?
Yeah.
Like the Flames almost feel like the land of opportunity right now.
Oh, absolutely.
For a younger player.
Yeah. Excellent segue, because I think part of that opportunity that's been taken advantage of is by Andrei Kuzmenko, who can be a little inconsistent, but the highs are so high. Like when he is on, I think he's the most talented player on this team. And when he's not on, then he's like, boy, could fit in the AHL. Like he is so all
when
over
he's
the
not
place.
On, he feels like a guy that's just destined to end up in the KHL.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Like it is all over the place with him. And so I do feel like it's an intriguing player, and it's the highs are so high that it's so tough to pass that up, I think, from a Flames standpoint, because that's what they're looking for, right? That's what everyone has talked about mm-hmm. with this team is, okay, they've done a bit of a teardown here. There's obviously still a bit of tearing to go, but they've done a bit of a teardown, and they have brought in some pretty good pieces, but there still isn't that game changer.
No.
If this kid can just for 82... then that's a game changer, I think. I've said this before.
Is he the cornerstone of a franchise, though?
I don't think he's best player on a championship team.
Right.
But I do think he is, like, I do think he plays on a championship team at some point. Like, I think he is good enough that he is a high-level, like, complementary piece. I think he is a guy who makes players around him better. I think the fit, obviously they've bounced everyone around the last little bit, but when it was him, Sharon Govich, and Huberto, I actually thought they played pretty well together. And so I think that there is... That's just a high level of talent that is going to be difficult for me to pass up. And I understand the most likely scenario is this dude gets traded next year. It's just going to be tough for me to deal with that next year, because I feel like he could be part of the solution here.
Yeah, but I would almost say, like, at that point, you're over 100 and some games into his tenure as a Flame. I would say that's pretty decent sample size. If you get a lot of what Kuzmenko has been this season, if you get that for an entire stretch, I'm not sure if you're really viewing him as a piece that you want in a team that is really moving towards a new era in their franchise, if that makes sense,
no,
right?
That's
like,
fair.
I do understand what you're saying when there's so much upside to this guy. You're looking at the shot, you're looking at the hands, you're looking at the offensive zone positioning. We can talk about his D zone a little bit later. He looks like a stray dog sometimes in his own zone, but, you know, That's fine when you're bringing a large amount of offensive upside. This is a guy who scored 39 goals in the NHL.
Yeah.
Who's to say there's still that, like, that's not still in him? Like, I think there's still flashes of that. Will he ever get to that marker? Who knows? But I think he can be an effective player. A game breaker, I would say, is a bit of a stretch. But I agree with the raw talent that you see there with Andrei Kuzmenko.
Just quickly, you and I had a bit of a disagreement on the Kings. I think that they are going to be one of those really don't want to play them in the first round teams because of how hard they can play. Specifically, like that Dano Arvidsson Moore line is probably going to see a lot of, if it is the Oilers that they get in the first round, I think those guys see a lot of McDavid. Yeah. And if it's the Canucks, they see a lot of Pettersson. Like, I think that's going to be their kind of shut down, really tough, grinded out team. Last night, they didn't show that a ton, but I do think that's going to be a really difficult team to play in the postseason.
I think you can still be right with that. When we were kind of having that conversation off air, I was basing it mainly on what I just saw from the Kings last night, right? Like, the first period, it was just a lot of transitional play between both teams, not too much offensive zone established play. It was just a lot of sloppy and ticky-tack chippy and choppy hockey. So when I look at their center depth, obviously the Kopitar, Dano, Dubois has been up and down, an absolute roller coaster. He's not been the player that the Kings hoped for when they made that trade for him, but I understand that they play a tough structure. Just yesterday felt like a game that if I'm the Oilers, I'm kind of salivating by playing the Kings again.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. Last night, I don't think was a great representation. I think they, like, that defensive brand of hockey plays in the playoffs, and I think they have enough goal scoring. Byfield has turned into a 20-goal scorer. Fiala is just always going to score goals now.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of that has been on the power play this year. You don't get as many of those in the postseason, but...
And their goaltending is obviously a huge talking point as well.
Totally, yeah. So, and that's the thing. Like, they could go out there, play a perfect style of hockey, but Talbot lets in two bad ones from Draisaitl and McDavid, and he does that four times, and the series is over, right? So I do understand that. I just think like they play a style of hockey that plays in the postseason.
Yeah, I understand that. It's a boring style. It's a style that won the Devils a Stanley Cup. It's a 1-3-1. It's a trap. It's something that you don't necessarily want to see, and it's almost bizarre that the Kings have kind of opted that because there is some high-end talent on this team. I think Kempe is an underrated goal scorer. People don't talk enough about the longevity of Kopitar sometimes, or even Doughty to an extent. Quentin Byfield is having a good season. He's been on a bit of a goal drought over the last couple weeks here, but he's been a guy that's kind of moving into... being worth that high-end draft pick that the Kings ended up grabbing him for.
We're going to have Emerson Edom coming up in about 10 minutes time to chat about the Ducks, but I do quickly want to get a little bit of a thought on the opposition tonight. They are obviously a team. They're not having the debate of whether it's rebuild or retool. They have firmly planted their flag with team rebuild. I think that they were hoping that maybe this year they would start to be coming out of that a little bit.
It's almost semantics. I will push back just a little bit just because Pat Verbeek is an aggressive GM and he's viewing this that they're going to want to try and accelerate this. It's still probably called the rebuild, but it's going to not be like a decade of darkness like we're seeing in Buffalo or Arizona right now. So
they were kind of hoping they had rebuilt. Right?
Yes.
They were rebuilding and now they were hoping they rebuilt, but they're going to have at least one more crack at the lottery. I think for this team, I'm not the biggest Zegras fan. I'm interested in a couple other young players, McTavish having a good season, Leo Carlson getting his first look at National Hockey League time. So they have a couple of interesting pieces, but is there anything you're watching for from this Ducks team tonight?
I'm kind of on the same page with you. Like Zegras, there is a lot of raw finesse, not even raw. There's like, kind of like just great puck handling skills, crazy highlight reel talent, but it doesn't really culminate in being the most effective hockey player at times. The Calgary boy on their blue line, Olin Zellweger, is a guy that I think is an interesting piece as well. He's a guy that's kind of fit in nicely. I've had a chance of seeing him play for the San Diego Gulls when they've come through town as I've covered a few Wranglers games here. He's been a guy that has a lot of offensive upside, and it almost feels like when they moved off of Drysdale, They did it knowing they had Zellweger in their back pocket, and he's kind of been a guy that's fit in nicely playing alongside Cam Fowler, even on their top pairing at times.
Yeah, so they have some young pieces that you can really get behind on this team, I think. Just quickly, I was doing the math in here. I wasn't just ignoring you and being on my phone. I was actually doing math. Kuzmenko, his per-game stuff with the Flames right now, if you stretch it out over 82, it'd be 32 goals and 30 assists over an 82-game span. Which is just good enough to tantalize you, but I don't know if it's enough to be like, oh yeah, we'll give you $5 million for the next three seasons. So I think that's going to be such an interesting debate all of next year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Those numbers jump off the page to you, right? Like 30 goals is a thing in the NHL that any team is looking to go spend and just throw, stacks of cash at you, right? So
yeah,
it's the highs and lows with Kuzmenko. He's a Russian roller coaster, similar to what Nikita Zadorov was here. You see, like, there's games where it's like, wow, this guy has so much talent, so much upside. And then there's times where you just don't even see him on the ice. So.
Yeah. No, there are games where it's like, this is one of the better players on this team. And then there's other ones. It's like, who is the ECHL affiliate for this team?
Yes.
Couple texts at 960-960. I see a lot of Alex Semin in Kuzmenko, which is, A, a funny thing to see in text. But B, it's kind of spooky how on that could be, and then another one here. We did win the Pacific and the Western Conference in the last 10 years, guys. All the pieces were there, just mismanaged and pissed them away under six different coaches in 9 years, and an inability to retain our own drafted star players. I think we were talking about the midness before. I will say, yes, they won the Pacific and the Western Conference, and that got exactly one playoff win, and that was, I think, a 1-0 game. Like it was when it came down to like the big winning times, this team wasn't there. And they had a couple of years where it went well.
I don't think in the playoffs. I don't think you can't deny that those teams were built to be a contender though.
No.
And they were built from a team that was hit the ultimate low and you drafted within the top 10. You got Matthew Tkachuk. You got your quote unquote game breaker, the guy who was supposed to be the face of your franchise and you built around him there. I don't see why not. I don't see any reason why this Flames team isn't headed into a similar direction just like they were before they ended up drafting Tkachuk.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and like, if John Cooper had that stretch with the Flames with Tampa Bay, he'd be fired. So, like, that's kind of where you look at, like, really successful teams don't accept what was going on here for a while. Yeah. And so that's where the Flames ultimately want to get to. All right. Time for us to take a break. When we come back, really excited, we're going to chat with radio color analyst for the Anaheim Ducks, Emerson Needham, going to talk about what he's watching for with his Ducks team, get a scouting report on a few of the young players. I have a few back in the day questions to ask him as well. So that is coming up when we come back here on Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's a Flames game day. Flames, Ducks tonight. 7 o'clock warm-up, 8 o'clock puck drop here on your radio. On radios in Anaheim, you will hear the color voice for the team and our next guest. He is Emerson Needham, former Anaheim Duck Medicine Hat Tiger. I'll say legend when you score almost a goal a game, over 65 games. I'll say legend. Emerson Needham joining the program. Emerson, how are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. As mentioned before, it's the Flames and the Ducks tonight. Want to get a bit of a sense of the opposition that the Flames will be facing tonight. As we're going down the stretch here, both of these teams' playoff dreams are now complete. So what are you watching for from a Ducks standpoint as the schedule kind of winds down here?
Well, the Flames are 2-8 right now. I should reverse it. I mean, look, this is a Flames team. What happened? You know, I'm scratching my head. I mean, at one point you're not far out of it, and then it seems like an epic collapse. But look, this Ducks team took down the team that just clinched a playoff spot, the Los Angeles Kings, and they've been playing some of their best hockey all season. So I think that says it all right now. I think short memory from us, and just the simple fact that we got by a very strong Kings team should, really keep this Calgary team on their toes.
Yeah, and the Flames had the opposite result against the Kings. They kind of got dummied last night, and you asked what happened here. I believe the technical term is the wheels fell off. I believe that's how it would be described from a Calgary standpoint. This has
all right.
Yeah, it has not been a very gracious close to the season for the Flames. When you look at the Ducks roster, there's a lot of really intriguing pieces on this team. And the one that kind of stands out to me, very recently drafted Leo Carlson. How has he looked in kind of his first taste of NHL action?
Well, he's puck touch. He always makes the highest percentage play. And, I mean, that's kind of him in a nutshell. I can go on and on. I mean, he's a very puck possessive type of player. He demands the puck. He's just, you know, if you're just at the top of the list of the best in the world, right, you think of, you know, McKinnon, McDavid, their routes that they choose to go, their body language, the point blank, just the routes they get themselves in, whether it's the D zone, the speed behind the puck, he's right there. I mean, he thinks along the lines of the best players in the world. Of course, he's not there yet, but just how he plays, you know, the habits that he does amongst the same kind of habits that, like I mentioned, the best players in the world do. I mean, he's going to be something special.
I think when you come in as a number two overall draft pick, it's not a scenario I've ever been in. And at 34, I feel pretty comfortable. It's not going to happen for me. But I would imagine for a kid like that, you want to come in and you want to make giant impact right away. And that can maybe lead you to sometimes playing a bit out of yourself a little bit. How nice of a sign is it that he didn't? And how important is it for a kid to just, you know what, do what you do best and the results will get there?
Yeah, and I think he's circumstantially, I mean, there hasn't been many lows. And look, it's his first year, right? Even though there's a ton of expectations, I think, you know, high draft picks should be afforded at least 1 year, right? To, you know, go through those going planes. And even if the production's not there, you know, I think they get a mulligan as far as their first year is concerned. But he hasn't needed that, right? I think with where our team is at, the Ducks, in a sense that look at where they're at in the standings. And I think if he had, and of course, Vetrano's that, Killorn, who he's been probably playing with most, or at least most consistently, you know, by no stretch of imagination, is he a 35 plus 40 goal scorer, right? And yeah, Vetrano's that guy. Leo hasn't played much with Vetrano. Who knows if at any point they have been paired together, but you know, Leo hasn't been paired with perennial goal, you know, 35, 40 plus goal scorer, right? So the rate in which he makes plays shift in and shift out, if he were to have that all year, I think he would definitely be in that point of game discussion. So I think that's held him back a little bit. And I just think just more recently, his ability to think more shoot first has made his game a lot more well-rounded, in a sense it's not kind of always pass. There was a stretch of time where he was in goal scoring territory and he opted to pass it, oftentimes actually connecting with that lack of finish from that support or maybe some of his line mates. So anyway, I think it'd be, could be even a different situation how the surroundings played out a little bit more in his favor.
Another player I wanted to ask about was Trevor Zegras. Back-to-back 23-goal seasons going into his his 23-year-old season, and then injuries kind of get in the way of most of this season. How do you feel like he kind of responded, and what would you make of his season as a whole this year?
I think he's been playing lights out. I mean, I think the adjustment to man-on-man defensively, from a transition standpoint, I don't know – you know, how much, and I never asked him, but, I think that had a part in the slower, the start of the season, lack of success. But once he came back from his first injury, he was lights out. And it's not too, right around that time he pulled that Michigan. I mean, he was playing really some really good hockey, and a lot like how I just mentioned of Leo. You know, coming back from this his second injury, the ankle there. I mean, look, he could have had probably 2 points a game, but there's that lack of finishing ability that the Sucks team has struggled with, you know, quite frankly, all year. That I mean, he should, but if not 2 points, you know, maybe he's not been putting himself really in a position to score much. But boy, has he been setting up his line mates, and I think he, you know, from just eye test, how much he's been setting people up. He should be at probably 2 points a game this last 3-4 games.
Chatting with a radio color analyst for the Anaheim Ducks, Emerson Edom, here on Sportsnet today. My name is Peter Klein. That is GVP.
Hey, Emerson. I wanted to ask you about some of the veterans on this Ducks team. They added some guys in Killorn and Radko Gudas this offseason. How important have they been for the young Ducks in their dressing room?
Yeah, I just spoke with Goods this morning, and it's been huge. They're guys that they show up when it counts, and that's on the ice, shift in and shift out. It's not like they're, big talkers in the locker room. Of course, they talk a lot, but most importantly, you know, and what maybe a Getzlaf, such a valuable leader is, you know, they back it up on the ice. Exactly what they're saying, they're going out and doing, and just the success and Radko's plus minus area just shows a lot, right? I mean, it's that's one of the key areas where, okay, even on a struggling team, hey, I mean, who's still providing a solid defensive presence that your plus minus, even, you know, should be bad, is very good. I think for Alex Killorn, I think he's in a little bit different situation, him being more of an offensive minded player. About, I think, being first line the majority of the year, he probably wanted it, but is it where he's traditionally been? No, and I think the pressures of that have maybe taken its toll at times, but nonetheless, both those guys are passionate leaders and definitely very, very important for this, the future players, the bright young stars of this team to have.
I got to ask you about the Calgary boy, Olin Zellweger. He's jumped up nicely coming up from the American Hockey League with the San Diego Gulls. I feel like there's a lot of potential there. What do you think his ceiling is as a player?
He's kind of got that Leo Carlson mentality, but just on the back end. I mean, he's every puck touch, he's making the highest percentage plays. Seemed like ever since being a mainstay coming up from San Diego there, I mean, you know, we're getting a guy who's consistently getting shots through at the blue line. Radko's been another guy, and once again, it's not like he's the same type of player, but just the veteran ability to find lanes to the net, Olin's got that, and he's come from more of a shiftier perspective in finding those lanes, but he's very active. He's high risk, high reward, and it's exactly what the Anaheim Ducks team needs.
Jacob Silverberg announces his retirement. He'll hang him up at the end of the season here. Tell me what he was like around the room and what he's done for this Ducks lineup and what they might be missing when he moves on after this season.
Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, maybe doesn't talk a whole lot, but, you know, I think and just with head coach Greg Gronin, his interview earlier this morning, it was an optional pregame skate for the Ducks. But, you know, his ability to relay what the coaches are trying to, you know, vocalize is huge. So just a guy who went about his business in the best way possible. And, you know, he's a guy that there's nothing bad that could be said about Sylvie. I mean, what a teammate. Easy to talk to, easygoing guy. And look, I think played his role well, just solid. And that play kept on for many years.
Chatting with Emerson Edom, the radio color analyst for the Anaheim Ducks, being out in Anaheim and in California for obviously as long as you have, what have you made of the growth of hockey out there? I know I did a minor hockey tournament out here, and there was a team that came up from Anaheim to play in the tournament, and admittedly, being the cocky Canadian about hockey that I am, I was like, oh, that's neat. They're going to come up here, they're going to lose a couple of games, and then they'll go back. And they kind of ran things for a while and were one of the scariest teams of the tournament. Obviously, hockey has had a real growth down there in the last little while, but you're there every day. What is kind of, or what has, I guess, been the growth of hockey, and where is it at right now here in 2024?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it has grown tremendously. I feel like the best, or at least the more progressive areas when it comes to the growth and putting your name on the map, I think that time is done. I think California has solidified itself as just the amount of players just recently that have come out of California, born, raised, trained. I think it speaks for itself, but I'm just curious, you know, where it goes from here. So it's certainly solidified itself. It's just, you know, how that continues to grow, really. I mean, obviously the former players retiring out here, I think that only helps. And I think that's going to be another key factor on the continued growth. But, you know, my Pee Wee team had, you know, myself, Jason Zucker, Matt Nieto, Bo Bennett, right? And I don't think that's really something quite like that has been done. So that's when I say it's kind of interesting with Cam York and, you know, obviously Craig Johnson's boy there, Ryan. And, look, I think it's, I don't know. It's hard. Once you solidify yourself, it's just, you know, sometimes it can get to your head and so on and so forth. So it's just going to be interesting how the mentality evolves from where we're at.
There's a lot of talent on one Pee Wee team. Did you guys lose a game? Like that seemed like quite a formidable force there.
Yeah, we were going up to Canada. I mean, we were taking out Tyler Seguin's teams and, I mean, yeah, we were really good. We were really good.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I do want to ask about a couple of things on the resume here before we let you go. Obviously, a lot of fans out here in Alberta will recognize the name and immediately remember, oh, yes, 61 goals in 65 games in 2011 and 12. That is one hell of a season. Was there a point there where you were like, oh, I got this. This is going to be like a real special year for me.
Yeah, I was at a whole nother level as far as physicality. I mean, it was my third year of juniors, and I tucked 45 or something around there the year before. And I essentially probably was NHL ready. Ducks were just so deep at that time. So I think it was just a perfect mix of me going back another year where maybe, I don't know, maybe in other organizations, that would have been kind of the year that I made my first appearance in the National Hockey League. So, it was just, I think I was, the biggest part of my success was the simple fact that I was just bigger, stronger, faster than a lot of the competition out there on the ice.
And then obviously a long time in professional hockey. And then 17-18, five games with HC Lugano out in Switzerland, and then another one in the playoffs. So not a long run, but what was the experience like out in Switzerland, and how does that all come about?
Oh, it's great. I mean, Lake Como wasn't too far. Probably as nice as an apartment you're going to get. You're driving around in a Maserati. I mean, life's pretty good, to be honest.
Wow.
It was a good experience. I only played for a few games there. I wasn't there for very long, but it was a blast for sure.
And then someone texted in to our fan feedback line, asked him about his time with the Cabri Bulldogs. And according to Wikipedia, you had 47 points in 11 games and then another 13 in two playoff games. So A, is that accurate? Cause it's Wikipedia. And B, if it is accurate, who in that league made you so mad that you had to do those poor guys that way?
Yeah, it wasn't just interesting. Calgary Bowl. It was Cabri.
Cabri. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. Cabri, Alberta. Maybe it's Cabri, Saskatchewan. I don't even. It took like 2 hours to drive there. I was in Medicine Hat. I was working with Willie Desjardins and the academy there. And it was just, it's a glorified beer league. And they paid me, I'm not going to say it, but cash. And I didn't have any practices. So I was like, sure, why not? I'll do that for one day a week. So yeah, it was pretty fun.
I don't think you need any practices. 47 points in 11 games. That is absurd.
Yeah. That's true. No, but it was easy. The guys were funny. In the locker room, good jokes, and it was a fun experience for sure. I don't know if I'd do it any longer than I did, but it was definitely for what it was. It was pretty fun.
And I apologize to my fellow Saskatchewan folks out there. It is Cabri, Saskatchewan, southwestern Saskatchewan, directly north of Gull Lake, population of 413. So I feel like you were close to like a tenth of a point per person that lived in Cabri. That's insane. Or in Cabri, yeah. Sorry. Emerson, thanks for doing this tonight. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the game this evening.
Hey, likewise, looking forward to it, and good luck to your friend.
Yeah, thank you. All right, there is Emerson Edom joining us here, former NHLer, former amazing Medicine Hat Tiger, and now the color analyst for the Anaheim Ducks. I know, like, growing up in a small town, Saskatchewan, that, like, what is beer league out here is a full, like, towns around league in my hometown, so, like, my hometown isn't big enough to have a beer league, but we got a beer league team. And Limerick has one, and Cornac has one, and LaFleche has one. Like, all these small towns have it. So it's a big league. And the senior men's team brought in what was run by, like, it's almost a TV show. It's run by the guy who runs the car dealership, who just happened to get a job for a dude who was playing pro hockey in Sweden. And he came and joined the team and had like 11 points in two games or something. So those kind of like, do you want to come in and play for our team out of Cabri, Saskatchewan, and light up these dudes in the White Mud Hockey League.
Yeah.
I love that sort of a thing.
No, and I came from, I played junior B for the Strathmore Wheatland Kings. Shout out to them. Heart lives and dies in Strathmore. Loved playing for that team. But you kind of mentioned there about you're going around to these cities and provinces where like that small team is almost like the game in town.
Yeah.
And it gives a chance for, like, I was just a mediocre hockey player, just played junior B, you know what I mean? But
right.
I got a chance to play in front of crowds and got a chance to, like, you know, feel like the game was a bigger deal than what it was. So, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying when you get a chance to go travel to these small towns and, you know, witness some absurdities at that level of hockey, because I've definitely seen some myself.
It is so funny to go back there. And like, I went back there one time and they won it. And it's the, there's like a river or something called the Nauticoo River that kind of connects all of them. But it's like the size of this room. Like to call it a river is hilarious. It is a large puddle at best. But it's called the Nauticoo. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Well, it's in southern Saskatchewan. We don't got a lot. But it's the Nauticoo River. So they call it the Nauticoo Hockey League or the NHL, which is hilarious
to
me.
That's awesome.
But I was back there one time when they won the NHL championship, which I'm amazed they didn't find some guy named like Stanley Smith or something to name the trophy after him.
Yeah.
But I went back there and it was so funny. Like, not to speak ill of anyone or anything like that, but it's like they won that championship and couldn't have been more cocky. And it's like I get paid to go into the NHL locker rooms and talk to these people, but it's like, I'm not anything because you just won a hockey game against some 45-year-olds out there.
It's not the real NHL.
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they treated it like it was.
And it's the working man's NHL.
They'll win and Facebook post, oh, I'm so proud of my husband. They just won the blah, blah, blah. I was like, cool, man. I just can't. I can't get there with that, but I'm so happy for you. But it is funny how seriously those things get taken. And I grew up in a small town with a junior B hockey team as well. The Assiniboia Rebels.
Yes.
Don't Google them. But the Assiniboia Rebels. And
another employee here, Connor's from Assiniboia.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
He is.
All right. I'll have to have a chat with Connor at some point. But yeah, it's so much fun to see how passionate everyone is around that sort of thing. So, and I just, like I said, I love stories like Emerson going
through.
It almost
made me love hockey again. To be honest, you know what I mean? Like playing in front of a small town, playing in front of people that loved the game, and you know, that's honestly made me re-love hockey, or like, you know, reinvigorate why I fell in love with it in the first place.
Yeah, no, and we like the Rebels were good when I was growing up, and we hosted the Keystone Cup one year.
Oh, yeah.
So it's teams from all around. It was so cool. Love those sorts of things, and it starts a passion that now has led me to fill in on an hour's notice on a radio station on a Friday. So
I'm right here with you,
right? Yeah, dreams come true, kid. Yeah, there we go.
There we go. A little fist bump there. Yes.
But no, like last note here: Flames Ducks tonight. I thought it was really interesting what he said about like Leo Carlson and just the way he thinks the game. Cause you look at the stats, they are not eye popping or anything like that, but it does really seem in 30 seconds or less, it does really seem like they got a pretty good one there with Carlson this year, 28 points in 52 games.
Yeah. And Emerson kind of, you know, nailed it on the head there where it's like, give this guy some time. All the talent is there. Maybe the stats don't jump off the page, but if you're doing a strict eye test, you can see what type of raw talent this guy has. And I think they got the pick right.
All right, that is going to do it. 1 hour in the books. That flew by.
I think we're doing a good job for what we were given.
I mean, for you, you've been awake for 72 hours in a row now.
I've been here for a long time.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah,
but
you're doing great.
It's all right. I'm glad to do it. I'm happy to be here.
Hey, you don't have to lie to me.
But, no, I'm not. I swear to God.
Happy to have
even
you here anyway.
Even with Cam in the other room, I'm happy to be here. No, that was a cheap shot.
You went hard enough on that.
That was a cheap shot.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to deal with more Cam in hour number two as we have Friday DMs coming up. So unnecessary. Also, just want to let you guys know, like we had some Flames talk here, but if you really want the hard-hitting Flames talk, not this Junior B Saskatchewan Flames talk, then tune in to Eric Francis. You see him on Flames broadcasts and read him on sportsnet.ca. Eric Francis goes solo every Friday at 5 p.m. for Flames Talk, the Eric Francis Hour. Eric isn't afraid to ask the tough questions to get the information Flames fans want. This is a must-listen for every Flames fan, and it's brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus, please play responsibly. Someone's texting in, I played for the Rebels, 98-99. I probably watched you. I was 9 at that time. So look at that, tying everything together here. Hour one is done. We got some fighting, some baseball, and some DMs in hour two next here on Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.